Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating Atlanta's heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of Atlanta's elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Brad.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well on this wet morning.
Staying dry?
Trying to stay dry.
Well, it's unusual, but we are definitely fighting the wet weather this year, aren't we?
Yeah, but we needed it. I'm not going to complain too much about it.
Yeah, we couldn't buy a rainy day 2 years ago, could we?
No,
we also have Lee Cantor in the studio with us this morning, our producer. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, gentlemen. A full house today. You brought a big crowd.
A big crowd and everybody here early today.
Safety in numbers.
Before we get started, we've got a couple of quick announcements. First of all, this is our last show on Tuesday mornings. We are going to be moving the time of our show next week to Wednesday, a new day, Wednesday, and new time, 11:30. So next week, Wednesday at 11:30. Secondly, just want to announce for those who are listening live or who could be listening today on Tuesday that tomorrow is the Gwinnett Senior Provider Network meeting, 11 o'clock at Ashton Senior Living on 1155 Lawrenceville Highway in Lawrenceville. So with that said, we do have a full house this morning and a terrific lineup of guests. We've got John Bishop, the Executive Director at Crossroads Hospice. We have Patsy Golden from Emory Eastside Heritage, and we have two from Plantation South, Melissa Mulhall and Sarah Beal. Welcome. We're going to start off with John Bishop this morning from Crossroads. John, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Brad. I'm really glad to have the chance to be here with you today.
Morning, Brad. John, sorry.
Man. You said good morning to me already.
And Sam has to mess up one person's name.
I always have to mess the names up.
John, it's great to have you here. You and I have known each other for a little while.
We have.
You are now the executive director at Crossroads. You've been doing that about a year?
A little over a year now, Brad.
And that was something that I'm not sure you expected to happen, did you?
I think that's a very accurate way of putting it. I had started out in my career at Crossroads as a marketer and mostly on the east side of Atlanta and Gwinnett and Hall counties. And lo and behold, about a year ago, they decided to make a change. I was perfectly happy with what I was doing, and they asked for my help, and I agreed to do it. So it's been a really interesting year with no one to transition me, but things have worked out well. And then, you know, I work for some really, really great people. So.
Now, what's Crossroads? What kind of facility is that?
Crossroads is a hospice that's located here in Atlanta. We focus on providing hospice care for people with terminal illness in their homes, whether that be in nursing facilities or assisted living facilities or in their own private homes. So that's what we do.
You can you tell us a little bit about how you got into hospice? Because that's not your background, is it?
Well, I was a psychiatric nurse for years and years and years, longer than I would really prefer to share because I'm getting to be a little long in the tooth. But I had been a mental health nurse, and the last 10 years I had been doing mobile mental health assessment for the Gwinnett Hospital System. So I went to area nursing homes and assisted living facilities and did mental health assessments for residents that they had that were having psychiatric problems or were having alterations in mental status where they felt like they wanted somebody to take a look and kind of get a feel for what was going on. And at one point, real honestly, the hospital system had asked me to start treating my customers in a way that just was not exactly what I would have preferred to do. So it was interesting. The next day I got a call from Crossroads saying, "We understand you're unhappy with your job." And I said, "Well, how did you find that out?" But I went down and they hired me and I started marketing for them. And it was an easy transition for me to go from psychiatric nursing and assessment into the hospice field.
Now, when from a patient standpoint, what are they going through? What challenges do you typically see mentally that they're working through?
Well, there's a number of them, Lee. You know, when I think it's a difficult time for anybody when they find out that they're approaching the end of their lives. And regardless of what their diagnosis may be, it can be anything from suddenly finding out that they have cancer to a progressive illness like ALS, where they, you know, lose their ability to essentially function physically and wind up being trapped in a body that's slowly dying. So we see all different types of responses from our patients and their families, which are also a big part of what hospice provides support for. But you deal with people that are oftentimes frightened, that don't know what to expect, people that may be struggling spiritually, people whose families may be in agreement or may not be in agreement as to what course of action that they need to take. Families and patients who oftentimes are unsure about whether to pursue aggressive treatment when, you know, oftentimes they're in a situation where there's little or no real hope for any kind of cure. Our medical establishment generally sort of puts these people in the ringer, and they go through all of that until the very last moments of their lives and frequently die in the hospital. And our job is to try to provide enough support for them in whatever setting that they live in order to allow them to die comfortably, with dignity, pain-free, and at peace with themselves and their surroundings. It's a very spiritual business. It's not always overt, depending upon the patients and the families. But from our end, the context is a spiritual one, so it's really, really rewarding work for us.
It sounds like the team that you put together has a really difficult job. They're dealing with people that are dying. They're dealing with families that are dealing with grief. Tell me about your team and how you select them and the characteristics that they have that enable them to be successful at this.
Well, there's two things that you bring to mind for me when you say that. And number one, you know, when I first went into hospice, I thought it was going to be really difficult work. And I found out to be that it's really just the opposite. It's not easy work, but it's rewarding work. And so it is difficult in that you grow attached to your patients and your residents, and that you want to do everything that you can in order to be able to support them. But on top of that responsibility is just the most wonderful opportunity in the world. How lucky can you be to be in a business where your job is to connect with people at what for many of them is the most difficult and important time of their lives? You know, that's a great opportunity for us. The team that we have is just really an outstanding one. We certainly have registered nurses and nursing assistants. We have chaplains and we have social workers. And Crossroads believes that the social workers and chaplains need to really be an integral part of what goes on. Sometimes in hospice, it's all nursing care focused, and that's only part of the job. Sometimes it's actually the chaplain or the social worker that really will play the lead role in that. So we're able to go out and really find wonderful people. And I'm lucky enough to work for people who allow me to go out and find the very, very best people that I can find, which has created a milieu where I work of my having the good fortune to be surrounded by just the most wonderful folks in the world. The people that work for us all stay focused with goals in terms of making sure that the patients and their families are what our mission's all about. Mm.
And you have a non-human member of your team.
We do. We have a a feathered friend. It's a parrot of mine, an umbrella cockatoo who's about 21 years old that I've had for 10 years. And when I was marketing, she slowly, from a beginning at Plantation South of Dunwoody, was able to start bonding with residents from facilities all over Metro Atlanta. And through the years, she's made friends with literally thousands of people, and just, you know, she's our mascot, and she loves to go out and make these people happy. And, you know, it's hard to go home at the end of the day and look in the mirror and feel anything but grateful to be able to go out and have that kind of impact and, you know, make what for some people is a pretty tedious life into something where they have a really special day. And that's, you know, that's our good fortune to be able to do.
John, I've seen this process in live in action. And tell our listeners how your parrot and you interact with these people and what value it brings to those.
Well, I'm happy to do that. The type of parrot that I have is a species that in the parrot world is essentially known as being the teddy bear of the parrot world. They tend to be very affectionate. Not all of them are, but this one is like a teddy bear with feathers. She's extremely affectionate. There is not a soul on earth, including our residents who might be very demented or agitated or people that are very depressed. Sometimes people who've had CVAs and their responsiveness is limited, their physical abilities are limited. People with ALS, the bird will climb up and lay down with them if they're bedridden, lay down and tuck her head under their neck, will allow them to stroke her even when they're contracted, and is just has the gift of being able to go out and give people some moments in time where they're able to feel really, really peaceful and really, really happy. That's kind of the gift she gives. And I was telling some people before the show, the amazing thing is we do all the stroking and yet we're the ones that feel better afterwards. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, she's been a great assistance, not only in terms of Crossroads, but just in terms of being able to go out and take people who are at a point in their lives where things have taken a pretty nasty turn and give them some moments of warmth and joy.
Do you see beyond the parrot, do you see that pets play a role with some of these patients and their families?
Pets are just incredibly important for our geriatric folks. Being a pet owner myself and loving pets the way I do, I'm pretty sensitive to what I see when I go out into buildings. You know, there's a number of companies that offer dogs and bring dogs in. And the response to people, I think for a lot of them, when they see a pet, it takes them back to a previous time in their lives where their lives were simpler and easier. And they can think of times of just being, you know, curled up in front of the fireplace with the dog in their lap or at their foot. And also being a pet lover, one of the things that we all understand is that there is an unconditional love that pets give to all of us. And that's hard to find. So I think they're a wonderful asset. And I'm proud to have one that participates that way. And I just think the world of the other people that utilize that manner as a way of trying to go out and make connections with people.
John, tell us a little bit about things you're involved in beyond Crossroads. Any specific causes or organizations?
Well, in regards to what you're asking, Brad, there's a couple of things that we're deeply involved in at this point in time. I think the primary one that I have is one that you and I share, and that is that we serve on the board of the Friends of Gwinnett County Senior Services, which is an organization that's a blend of private individuals and private business with people who work for county senior services. And what we try to do is to raise money to support the county's Meals on Wheels program, as well as provide emergency services for our seniors in the community who have household emergencies, safety urgencies, leaking roofs, rotting decks, repairs for cooling and heating. And we're able to through our fundraising, be able to substantially assist the county in being able to provide these services. I think, Brad, when you and I got on that board, we probably had no idea that a relatively wealthy county like Gwinnett would not have the funds to be able to make sure that anybody in the county that was hungry got fed. And lo and behold, we find out that there's a huge waiting list in Gwinnett County of people that have requested that kind of assistance, and the county can't provide it. So we've been able to step in as a board and to help with that. We've purchased the county's vehicles for them. The trucks that they deliver the meals on were purchased by the board for the county, as well as making sure that they have enough money and enough resources to be able to make sure that anybody that needs that kind of help can receive it. And then again, we have issues with recently with the rain and all. We were able to assist people that had flood damage, things that made their homes unsafe during the summertime, making sure that people had fans and air conditioning. Just the right kind of thing for all of us to be able to do to help out our seniors. The other thing that we've recently done at Crossroads, which is different for us, is that we have reached out combined with the local ALS agency in Atlanta, and our foundation at Crossroads is going to start providing full-time bereavement services for every family in metro Atlanta who are surviving an ALS patient. It's something that we felt like that we needed to spend the money that we have in our foundation in a way and to target it in a manner to make sure that we benefit people that oftentimes go through a really, really horrendous time in watching their loved one go through a torturous time leading to their death, and that most of the time these people are just allowed to find a way to grieve on their own. And we all know, as being professionals in caregiving, that people don't always grieve successfully, and that one of the things that we can do is to help those people feel like that they have the appropriate support to be able to make it through that point in time after the loss of their loved one.
John, for the family whose loved one is facing an end-of-life time, what piece of advice might you give that family?
What I would offer is that I think the thing that makes me the saddest is when I see families who are in crisis and they don't ask for help. There are so many resources that are out there for people. You'll be hearing from Patsy Golden in a few minutes, and she works at Eastside Heritage. So many of our seniors that have dementia can wind up having difficulty at home because of problem behavior, safety issues. We have agencies like hers that are able to bring people in and stabilize them to make sure that we're able to keep symptomology under control. There are numerous outpatient agencies as well as private and public agencies that can provide support for seniors who are dealing with difficulties, whether they be hospice-related or not. And so what I would, in terms of advice, offer is to ask for help. And that even if the people you ask for it are not the providers, one of the things that makes us all kin in this business is that we all have the same mission, and therefore we all know a lot about what goes on in the community. So any of the people that are here talking today or at any other time are all available to listen to people who have concerns and I think are skillful enough to know how to route them to make sure that they get their needs met.
We appreciate that that advice, that information, John. If our listeners want to reach you, how can they do so?
Well, you can reach me at the General Crossroads number, which is area code 770-270-9898. But really, the easiest way to reach me, rather than going through all of that, is just to call me on my cell phone. And my cell phone is area code 678 205-200-9892. I see people smiling. God, this guy's offering his cell phone. But, you know, when it goes into voicemail at the office, I can't even promise I'm always going to get it. So, you know, the nature of my business and my job is such that I'm always available, so I have no problem at all with people contacting me that way.
John, we appreciate your cell phone. We appreciate you being here. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thanks for being our guest.
I'm truly delighted to have been here. Thank you.
Our next guest is Patsy Golden. Good morning, Patsy.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
I appreciate it.
Patsy, you are certified in something that I can't even pronounce.
Thanatology. It's a study and work with of people that are in death, dying, and bereavement. It's a fancy word. I just like to say I'm a grief counselor.
Well, that's kind of a nice segue from what John does.
Exactly.
You work for Emory Eastside Heritage Center.
I do.
Tell us what you do there.
I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I'm the supervisor of all the social workers over there. Plus, I carry a caseload of my own. Eastside Heritage Center is part of Emory Eastside Medical Center, and we have a 61-bed inpatient geriatric behavioral health unit. We evaluate and treat patients with Alzheimer's, other dementias, depression, bipolar, anxiety disorders, try to evaluate where they are in their illness, what their care needs are, and try to help the families figure out, you know, what do I do next.
How do you help them manage the challenges when you're dealing with somebody with dementia? I mean, that's such a difficult time.
Well, you know, I think the first thing that we do is provide not only the support but the education to the families. Most families seem to think this memory loss is part of normal aging. Oh, well, they're 75. They should be forgetting things. But memory loss that affects your day-to-day living is not normal aging. So you really do need to figure out, you know, what's causing the memory problems, and then try to get the right medications for it, because a lot of the dementias also come with, it's not just memory loss, it's also behavioral issues.
Patsy, you mentioned that memory loss that affects day-to-day living is not normal. I mean, I can't remember things that came my way 3 minutes ago. So differentiate between those two situations.
If you're truly aware of your being forgetful of memory, you're probably not having dementia. Most dementia folks...
I've lost my excuse, haven't I?
Yeah, there you go. Most dementias that affect day-to-day living, such as not being able to do your checkbook, paying your bill a couple times, not wanting to get out of the house and do normal things that you normally do, you know, start accusing your husband of cheating when you just can't find him in the house. There's lots of things that are not normal day-to-day activities. You forget to take care of yourself. You forget to bathe. When families start seeing this, then they really do need to get an evaluation and get it treated. Because if it's just memory loss, starting mild memory loss, there's some wonderful medications that can slow that progress down. If it's more than that, then you're starting to talk safety.
Now, can you get better from dementia, or is this a chronic thing that once it starts, it's only getting worse?
Yeah, most dementias are progressive, and they do get worse over time. And that's one of the benefits of the medications, is that that can slow that progress down, keep the quality of life intact for longer, so that, you know, even small things, families maybe recognize you a little bit longer, may be helpful.
Most people, when they hear about dementia, the first thing you think of is Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. But there are other kinds of dementia.
Right. Dementia just means that your thinking's not right, your memory's not right. And Alzheimer's is the most prominent cause of dementia, but there are probably, you know, multiple dementias. There's frontal lobe that affects the front part of the brain, which is extremely hard to deal with because the front part of our brain is what affects our insight and our impulsivity and our judgment. We have folks that come in and they get diagnosed with frontal lobe, and they look good and they can talk to you well, but can they manage their own day-to-day business is usually no.
So the treatment of these dementias, are they different in terms of, and not just from a medication perspective, but from the perspective of how the family deals with it? Are they similar? Are they different?
Well, usually if you have a dementia, your loved one has a dementia, there's different medications, and there's medications for the different behaviors. But as far as the family taking care of them, it's pretty much the same regardless of what's causing the dementia. You still need to find out whether they're safe to continue to live in their home, whether they maybe should still be driving, because the person with dementia is not going to be aware that they have problems that affect their day-to-day life. Matter of fact, they deny that there's any problems. They may say, well, I'm a little forgetful, but in everybody. And so the struggle for the family is that they're fighting a battle with somebody they love that doesn't understand they need help. So a lot of times that role reversal, especially if it's an adult child, is really very difficult because now you're going to have to parent your parent, and your parent doesn't want you to.
How do you make the parent aware that they need help? In a respectful,
If they're able still, it's like mild cognitive impairment. They're in the beginnings of their process. A lot of times we'll let the doctor be the one that starts that conversation. We do, at the Heritage Center, do a complete evaluation. We have the psychiatrist do the evaluation. We have a neuropsychologist that does the cognitive testing. You have the clinic. Every patient and every family has a clinical social worker involved with them. So we do the total evaluation, and then we take the doctor's lead, and once the doctor has kind of opened that door, then we come in behind and say, I understand you've talked with the doctor. Let's talk about it. And sometimes they go with that program, and sometimes they battle it. They don't go lightly into that night.
Do you have a story to share with us about a time when you and your organization have been able to make an impact in a family's lives?
You're talking about a family or maybe an individual? Just recently I had a 70-year-old gentleman come into the hospital. We diagnosed him with bipolar and that frontal lobe dementia. He was being financially abused by a couple that had taken him in. And while he was in the hospital, someone had used his debit card and just completely wiped out his account. So I was able to get him into a good personal care home. I was able to reroute his railroad retirement. I was able to get the police and APS, which is Adult Protective Service, involved. And I hooked him back up with the family, which had really not been paying attention for a while. So. And I checked on him last week, and he's really doing well.
Mm. Is that typical, that level of service?
It can be for me. I don't know that. I definitely get very invested in my patients.
Uh-huh. Tell us what you do outside of your work at Eastside.
Well, I do, with my grief work, I do work with Snellville United Methodist Church. I lead a support group there 10 weeks out of the year, and we are currently in the middle of that group. Tomorrow night we are talking about how to deal with the holidays. So I have my certification for my grief counseling through ADEC, which is Association of Death Education and Counseling.
So what advice are you giving for dealing with the holidays?
For people that are grieving, usually you need to kind of not do it by yourself. You know, if you can get support from other folks, that would be it. I also would suggest that, you know, you don't have to do it all like you had it before. Sometimes you have to get new traditions, and you keep some of the old, but you don't have to do all the hoopla. But definitely not do it by yourself.
And how would you advise families that are dealing with either a spouse or a parent that are starting to be impacted by dementia and the time when they're first starting to realize that there's an issue, and of course the family members or the spouse have never dealt with this before. How would you tell them?
You definitely need to find out what you're dealing with. So many families are just thinking, again, like this is the normal part of aging. You need to get some evaluation. If you you can't deal with the problem unless you understand what the problem is. And then a lot of families have a great deal of difficulty addressing that with the older adult. We try not to make it the If we have to move them to a new facility, we try not to make it the family's fault. This is the doctor doing it. This is the hospital doing it, even to the point where we suggest they not be the ones that transport when we discharge.
Do you see that families have maybe a sense of confusion or even hopelessness, that they feel powerless to deal with these issues, or maybe aren't equipped to deal with the new behaviors that they're seeing?
Oh, definitely. They just don't know what they're dealing with. They don't know that this is an illness. There's a lot of grief involved with intervening and seeing your loved one change. There's a lot of guilt in stepping in and taking away my mother's independence. But the way I see it is that, you know, once you learn what the problems are, then, you know, you really need to think of it from a safety standpoint. That's your job, is to keep your mom or your dad safe. And continuing to let them live by themselves may not keep them safe. And that's really where their focus is. Families don't usually know where to start. And that's part of our job, is to help educate about the illness, but also educate about the care needs of the patient and what resources are out there, and then try to hook them up with that resources, whether it's, sitter service or assisted living or nursing home. We help them figure that out and then support them in their plan.
Patsy, and if we have listeners who need help, who don't know where to start, how could they reach you?
I would think the best way would be through my email, which is Patsy, P-A-T-S-Y, dot Golden, G-O-L-D-E-N, at hcahealthcare.com.
And what's the website of the facility? Is it just the end there? It's probably the end, right?
I truly don't know what the website is. You can email me, and I'll hook you up with whoever you need to hook up to.
And I know you can Google it and get to it if you Google Emory Eastside Heritage Center. I've done that before, and that'll get you there.
There you go. There you go.
So, Patsy, thank you for being with us this morning.
Oh, my honor.
Okay, we're going to play a little musical chairs here, and so Sam and I are going to dance a little bit.
Who do we have up next? Why don't you start the intro?
Our next two guests are from Plantation South, an assisted living facility. We have Sarah Beal, who is the activities director, and Melissa Mulhall, who is the director of community relations. You'll find this segment of our show probably very uplifting and fast-paced, if I know these two ladies. So let's get started. Sarah, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Let's begin with you, Sarah. Tell us a little bit of your background. How did you get into this business and things of that nature?
I actually got into it. I did some volunteer work at a nursing home. Started when I was in high school and then a little bit after. And at the time, my parents owned a restaurant, so I worked for them. And then they sold it, and I saw an ad in the paper for the nursing home I had volunteered with. So in the activities department, So I actually called up the director, and she was like, oh, I want you. So I went up there. I actually got hired that week and did that for a little bit. And then I've also worked at a couple assisted living facilities as well.
When I was speaking with you earlier, you mentioned you used a very descriptive term about what you get to do on a daily basis. Can you tell us that?
Well, I actually just get paid to run around and be crazy. That's, I think I told you, my poor parents had to deal with me growing up. Kind of just, I have a little extra energy. It's still a little early this morning, so I'm not bouncing off the walls. But, so it's great for me. I'm super lucky. I'm at a job that I love, and I get to use my personality to its fullest. And the more energy I have and the more happy I am, the more the residents love it. You know, they get to see me just running around smiling, and they just laugh all day at me. I don't know if that's a good thing, but
how do activities impact your residents?
Well, I mean, honestly, that's their whole day. That's, you know, I mean, I'm kind of in charge of their almost every moment, you know, besides meals.
Why don't you take us through a day? What's it look like? They wake up, like, what, 4 in the morning, 5
yeah,
in the morning?
Yeah, usually up pretty early. I'm still asleep.
Dinner's at 3.
Exactly.
Just take us through the day.
Start off every morning. We do morning exercise, which is a great way just to get everybody moving. I usually start off the morning, we've got 25 residents in there ready for exercise, go through the calendar with them, what all we're doing, just kind of give them a heads up on everything. We do our morning exercise, and we do a lot of, you know, it's all sitting down. We do leg lifts and punches and stuff, but then we've kind of integrated in. We do the wave, and we sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and we do rolling with our arms, and we sing Roll Out the Barrel. So get a little fun in there, get everybody laughing. We do coffee and donuts every morning. You know, food's a big deal. So always have that going on. I'm trying to think. We do word games. We do usually in the morning. We try to stay a little calm, I guess. And then after lunch, the real craziness breaks out. We do a lot of sing-alongs. Thank you. We have a general store at the building that when we play bingo, they get bingo bucks and then come spend that in the store. That's open a couple times a week. So that's cool. There's candy and there's, you know, shampoos and stuff, just fun stuff so they can come shopping. We have a lot of entertainers, big on having entertainers come in.
So you have a guest entertainer?
Mm-hmm. We do. We've had a juggler. We've had Elvis impersonator. We've had a harpist, a little bit of everything. Of course, they have their favorites. I had an accordion player. Yes, that was our Oktoberfest.
I thought she was trying to say charade player.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what she was doing. But
sounds like.
Yeah. But yeah, a little bit of everything. You know, of course, the residents have their favorites. Sometimes after every person that comes in, we want them every day. And I'm like, well, I don't know.
From your position, what is your favorite activity to be doing with the seniors?
My favorite activity, dancing. They're big fans of dancing, and we have videos of us all just, and I mean,
is that on YouTube?
We should put them on YouTube, definitely. But I mean, seeing a 95-year-old get up and you know, I'm all about some music from the 40s and 50s, but we'll play Casey and the Sunshine Band, and you know, I have one man who I seriously have to sit down and take breaks, and he's just still just, you know, really, he just spins me around. That's his only part, and I actually am moving, so I guess that's why I get so tired. But
great. Let's move over to Melissa. Melissa, why don't you tell us your capacity with Plantation South? How did you come about that position?
Okay. I have 7-year-old twins, and Sarah is a personal friend of mine before this job, so I would bring the girls in, and we would come visit Sarah and help pass out ice cream and kind of hang out with the residents, and the girls loved it. We would go in pretty much every weekend that Sarah was working. So the ED, executive director there, actually had the position open, and I was looking for a job, and that's kind of how I got into the position, kind of fell into the right place.
It was because of me.
That's interesting. Both of you came by way of your current position through a volunteer situation. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Very good. Tell us, Melissa, your capacity at Plantation South and what are some of your responsibilities?
Okay, as Director of Community Relations, I'm kind of in charge of just getting our name out to the community, letting people know that we're there, telling them a little bit about us and what sets us apart from other assisted living facilities. Also, introducing families to the community and kind of finding people that are appropriate for our facility and that kind of helping them. You know, a lot of times we get phone calls, people don't know where to start. They know that their families or their loved ones need some help, and they have questions, and they don't know where to go. So it's kind of helping those people, educating them as well, letting them know, you know, well, gosh, we may not be the right place, but there's another place that, you know, might be able to help
what's
you.
What's a sign that your place is the right place? Like, what are the characteristics of somebody who would be a fit for you guys?
Somebody that loves to dance, I
guess.
I guess
that's it, dancing.
Just really, for assisted living facilities, they're people that just need a little bit of extra help. Like, maybe they have the onset of dementia and are having trouble managing their medications and things like that, need a little help with the bathing and things like that. So they're just, you know, for
kind
their
of that
safety.
Gray area.
Right, it's exactly.
That, you know, we're not a nursing home. We're not
independent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's unique about Plantation South?
Us. Other than you guys.
Yes, us. We have several things, I think, that set us apart. I kind of like to refer to us as the bed and breakfast of assisted living. We're a very small facility. We have a couple of programs. We just started about 4.5 months ago, a senior day program. So, you know, if your loved one still lives at home and isn't really ready to make that next step, then they can come hang out with us, with Sarah, mm-hmm. all day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. They can come in for an hour. Say you just want to go grocery shopping by yourself. You want to go get your nails done. You know, want to go play golf. You know, you can take your family member, let them be entertained by Sarah. We will feed them well. And the cost is basically like $10 an hour, which is phenomenal. So we do that. We also do respite stays, which kind of sets us apart. If you're going on vacation, you know, things like that, then your family member can come stay with us for a couple of days. Another thing that sets us apart, caregiver turnover in this industry is horrific. I mean, there's just a lot of turnover in this industry.
And, why do you think that is?
You know, it's a hard industry a lot of times. You have to take care of people, and it's you can get a little attached, and then if that person passes, and, you know, I think it's
stressful.
Just, it's very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But we have some caregivers that have been there since the building was built, 18 years ago. We have a caregiver that's been there 13 years. I think in the past year and a half, we've only hired for PRN, which is to cover vacations and things like that. So your family member gets to know who's coming in to help them, and the caregiver knows exactly who likes to go to sleep earlier, you know, sleep late. And so they know the ins and outs of everybody, and they don't have to learn somebody new every day.
Why do you think the caregiver turnover is so low?
Because we're
awesome.
We're amazing. We're an amazing facility. And no, that's
just put that right on the tee for you.
That's on our name tags, by the way. We're amazing. I think because we're a small facility, and so we are very family oriented. I mean, these people are our family, and, you know, we have residents that have been there for 5 years, you know, so everybody just gets to know each other, and it's just a very small community. And I think that helps with that, because it isn't as overwhelming, and, you know, they get to know the residents.
What kind of financial assistance is available for families to help pay for assisted living?
Well, we are a private pay facility.
What does that mean?
That means we do not accept insurance. So we do, a lot of people don't know that the VA, you are eligible for VA benefits. So we do have someone that we can refer them to that will go through all the red tape for you. She can tell you pretty much how much the VA, because she's been doing it for so long, how much they're likely to pay. So we have someone that will take care of that. But pretty much we're a private pay facility.
So the VA can actually, you can have funds if you're a veteran, mm-hmm. they can go towards this?
Yes, sir.
And also widow's benefits, and it's not necessarily just the veteran.
Oh,
so.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what about long-term care insurance? Would that cover assisted living?
It does. It does. Sometimes, usually what we do is bill the family, and the family can send that to the insurance company. So we do accept that as well, which it's not... That's a new thing that's really starting to come around, which is great. I'm really glad that, you know, that's going on, but not too many people
have that right now.
Part of that, right.
Sarah, obviously, as being activities director, requires...
I prefer director of excitement.
Director of excitement. that answers my question. Requires a great amount of energy, and it's got to be rewarding to continue to be willing to spend that type of energy. So tell us what you find and why it is so rewarding to you.
Well, honestly, I would probably rather hang out with a lot of my residents than people my age some of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're awesome. They're so much fun. It's I don't know. For me, I just, it's like I said, I come to work and I hang out with my friends, and they're so intelligent and have seen so much and known so much, and it's just hilarious, some of the stories. So for me, it's just, I don't know, it's totally worthwhile, but it's also great seeing the residents having fun and seeing the residents knowing that they're not just sitting there all day, just, okay, what's next, you know, and it's getting them moving and getting them doing stuff and having fun.
I take it from your conversation, from your description, that movement, activity, involvement is very important, not only for the physical well-being, but to our earlier segment, to the emotional and mental well-being. Can you talk to us a little bit about why it is so important?
Well, I mean, it, as far as physically, it keeps you moving, keeps you healthy, but brain-wise, you're keeping it moving, you're keeping it going. I mean, you know, we heard about dementia, and you can't really stop it, but you can kind of prolong it. And so, you know, as long as we do our different, you know, different word games and name that tune and, you know, stuff like that, that's just kind of keeping you going. And so you're not getting all rusty. We keep the brain dusted good off.
The two of you share a common cause. Tell us about that.
Well, we both actually just recently walked with the Alzheimer's Association, the Memory Walk. Her kids came along. We had some of our residents' family members came along. Wanted to bring the residents, but figured maybe we'd...
Tell us a little bit about that memory walk, what it is related to, who it benefits, when it is, things of that nature.
Well, this year it was on October 10th. Mm-hmm. It's done through the Alzheimer's Association. They do the memory walk every year. It raises money, definitely, which is always a great thing, but raises awareness and really gets people to educated about Alzheimer's and who it affects. And, I mean, there's, you know, everybody knows somebody's grandfather or parent or, you know, it hits everybody. So that was really the great thing, was just, I think, money, obviously, but raising the awareness about it, getting people knowing about it and talking about it. The Alzheimer's Association is awesome. They do a lot of education, professional education, but then they do for caregivers. There is support groups. And, I mean, that's a big thing, too. If you're taking care of 24/7 someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, I mean, that just drains you. Mm-hmm. So it's really awesome, too, to those people need, you know, you got to take care of yourself, too. So the Alzheimer's Association Memory Walk was great. Duluth, where we are, is an awesome community, really like our building, really family-oriented. So being at the walk, it was great. You see people, oh, you know, so-and-so. And so it was really neat. And I think the Duluth, North Fulton, it was over $750,000 that they raised the Alzheimer's Association. Great. So that was really awesome.
Melissa, if there's a listener who has a loved one, a family member who is looking to do something, what piece of advice might you give that individual as far as your facility or what to look for?
Well, first of all, I just tell them to, you know, go online and do some research. You know, we're more than happy to answer any questions that they have. Go online, look at, you know, like the grades from the state, you know, look at their, you know, ratings and make sure before you go in there. Also, a lot of times I like people to just drop in. Don't let me know when you're coming. Just drop in. You know, you want to see if they're busy, if Sarah's doing what she's supposed to be doing, or if she's, you know.
I saw you in the parking lot, so I started doing activities.
You can't say if she's goofing off because that's part of her job.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's just her 24/7. So, but just drop in and make sure that people, you know, the residents aren't just sitting there doing nothing. You know, kind of surprise us. Go in and have lunch and, you know, because again, like she said, the food is very important. So, you know, and that's a big social time for them. So, but you want to make sure that there are a lot of activities. There are a lot of places that don't have very many activities. So, you know, not to toot her horn because she won't be able to fit out the door when we leave. But just really try and go online and find out as much as you can about the facilities that you're looking at and look at a bunch of different facilities. Some people, it may be more appropriate for them. They may feel more comfortable in a bigger facility. Some people may feel more comfortable in a smaller facility. So, I mean, it's hard. You know, you have to educate them and kind of lead them in the direction to learn and educate themselves.
Sarah, from the perspective of an activities director, what piece of advice would you give to families caring for loved ones?
Well, you know, keep them active, keep them going. It's, I think, a lot of the seniors, you know, obviously they've been through a lot, and there's times now where if they're the only one left in the family, they've lost children, lost husbands, My thing is, you're not going to sit around and think about that when you're doing something else and having fun. And you know, I think places obviously like ours, but that do like a senior day program, if you are caring for your loved one at home, even if you don't need to get out and do stuff, have them come by for a couple hours a day. I mean, just to be around other people their age and, you know, to be able to socialize and different experiences, or even if they are kind of just want to sit and just hang out and watch everybody, at least, you know, they're doing something different. It's not just the same old every day. But also, I mean, take care of yourself. If you're caring for somebody, like I said, 24/7, that's hard, and you can't do it unless you're, you know, taken care of too. So.
Good. If we have listeners who want to reach you, tell us how they could do so.
Well, we actually have give you our website. It is www.psduluth.news.blogspot.com. That has pictures from the community and all of our information, calendars and everything. And then also,
you can call us on at 770-623-0617. And you can ask for me or Sarah if you want, you know, someone kind of calm. You ask for me if you want someone really, you know,
you
hyper
ask
for Sarah. Yeah. If you want to enjoy yourself, talk to Sarah. So.
Well, we really appreciate you all being here. It's been a great time. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope I know our listeners got a lot of good, valuable information. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you to all of our guests, Melissa, Sarah, Patsy, John. Thanks for being here today. Thanks to you, the audience, for tuning in to listen to this show online, www.ugeriaradio.com. And remember, next week we will be on Wednesday at 11:30. And finally, if children are our nation's greatest asset, seniors are our nation's greatest treasure. Tune in next week for another great edition of Ugeria Radio.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and is recorded in the Business Radio X Studios.